Okay, well, today's episode turns out not funny at all. So.
Captain's Pod, Stardate 19.10.35. I don't have a clue because the clocks have changed. Welcome aboard to the Starship Enterprise, and thank you for joining us as we take a brief short leave from the world of cinema since to explore the universe of Star Trek. I'm your Captain Ian Whittington, and with me, as always, it's a matter of biology.
Biology?
Vulcan biology.
Vulcan biology.
Yes, Vulcan biology. It's Ambassador Danae!
I haven't done that with anybody in so long. You know, like gone back and forth on a movie quote situation?
Oh.
That felt really good.
And I didn't need to explain it. It just happened. You knew what to do.
I did. Instantly.
This is why movies are so great and you should watch more. You should dedicate your life to now just watching movies. The eye roll she just gave me.
I kind of have. That's kind of my job now.
That is kind of your job. Are you ready for a year of hell?
You know, what a brave title to give something.
It really is, isn't it? Like, you're in for some shit this week.
The weight of that title alone makes me not want to watch it. Like, I don't need a year of hell. I need a vacation.
It's heavy, isn't it? Especially when, like, this is Voyager, and you're in season 4. They've been in the Delta Quadrant for 4 years, and now you're going to give them, in the title, a year of hell. Like, they're already in a hellish situation. How much more are you going to beat up on them? Like, that's exactly what I remember when I first heard the title for this episode. I was like, it was already bad. It's going to get worse.
I guess that might be an interesting thing that makes you want to tune in is, oh yeah, these guys have had a shit life for so long. Let's see what else the universe throws at them for a year.
It's amazing. I don't want to get into any spoilers, but a quick prediction, Ambassador, before we dive in.
I don't think it's going to actually show us an entire year. I think we're talking about like maybe some time travel or something strange. Maybe they lose a year or something goes squiffy because there's no way that they're just going to drone on and on and on an episode. I guess it is 2 episodes though. Oh God, what are we going to watch?
But it's just really mundane things like they just stub their toe every day. They have a year of really bad luck.
I hope it's a comedy. Like, I'm ready for something to make me laugh, but...
Oh, boy.
Voyager always seems so serious. Everyone I've watched is like, man, this is really intense. This is like a action show instead of... There's not really like a humor beat for me. So I don't know. I'm kind of hoping for that because I've had a very long week and I'm ready to laugh at something.
Oh, boy. Okay. We're ready for the comedy episode Year of Hell. This is going to be great.
No.
Thank you, the multiple people who submitted this. The other interesting thing about the Year of Hell is that it gets submitted for the time travel theme. It's been submitted for the fan favorite.
Should we write about time travel?
Theme. Maybe. It didn't get picked for the time travel theme, so maybe there's a wink in there.
So heavy and serious. Great.
It even got picked for the romance theme. Like, there isn't a theme that we've suggested where Year of Hell hasn't come up, so... I'm excited to get into it. I'm excited for you to have a bucket of laughs during this episode. We'll see you in 10 forward for a full nervous debrief. Two to beam out.
Oh, no.
Welcome to 10 forward, the part of the show where we grab something from the replicator, presuming they're still online, and share our immediate thoughts and feelings about the episode we just watched. Ambassador Danae! What would you like from the replicator?
Something funny. Maybe like one of those whipped cream pies that can just go in someone's face and just try to lift the mood ever so slightly.
Can you imagine mid-speech Janeway just gets cream-faced with, a pie?
I think that you can't get a replicator after this episode. I feel like Janeway told us that that's somebody's meal, so it would be choosing death for someone, and I don't feel comfortable with that decision. So
it's very loaded, isn't it? I would like Tuvok's awesome cutthroat razor blade thing that he uses to shave, because that thing is ornate as heck and we never see it again. It is beautiful, and it is, I think, its only appearance in Star Trek.
There you go.
I want it so much. Give us a synopsis, he says hesitatedly.
Oh, okay. Well, today's episode turns out not funny at all. So my little prediction
was the cold open.
Very wrong. Yeah. If you ever want to see what it's like, I like to do my synopses like this. I've realized I'm just like connecting to like one of the most important parts of like the recap for me is I like to keep in mind what this episode would do for someone. So this is the kind of episode that you want to watch if you want to see what happens with a long time battle where the ship is slowly being disassembled and the crew is having to survive a ship being blown up in various ways. So this is, I've never seen anything like this before. So it was very interesting to me.
I literally have that as one of my notes. Yeah. It's so true.
Yeah. I think that's like the big draw for this one. I don't know. For me, it's a really, really interesting one for Voyager because you get to see the crew doing all kinds of survive this and do that and mystery this. And it's very, very serious. Like they're under siege. So this is a siege episode. In fact, it's a siege double episode because we're not done yet. We're not even, I think we're like day 73.
Yeah, we still have like 9 months left. This was the first trimester of hell.
I was wrong also about this really just showing all of the year.
Yes.
So.
I love that so much. Your prediction was like, I don't think we're going to see an entire year. I think there's going to be, there's no way they would, the way you were spelling out exactly what they wouldn't do and the fact that it's exactly what they do, I was like, this is amazing. This is so great. That might be your least accurate set of predictions to date.
Exactly ironically. What I was going to say. Yeah. But the more specific kind of recap of this one is that Voyager has, through Borg technology, discovered a way to analyze the stars and take data from their location to sort of more accurately plot a path home, shaving off 5 years of their time to return, which means they're going to be going through a particular territory that just so happens to have massive weapon, and this particular vessel exists outside of the space-time continuum in order to achieve their goal of getting to a very specific timeline. They are wanting to reset as much as they possibly can until they arrive at this very specific set of sequences that will do something for them in some kind of a way. The problem becomes when Voyager enters in and pisses them off, they end up figuring out a way to survive the siege by altering their deflector shield things. And technically that puts them on this temporal mapping system. So when the quote unquote bad guys set off their next round of this weapon to try to find their preferred timeline, unfortunately, Voyager's time signature fucks with it just enough that it messes up their timeline badly, and they have to go find Voyager and be like, hey, listen, we got to figure out, like, you just messed something up. So the bad guys take a couple of the members. I think Kim and Chakotay are taken.
It's Tom.
Tom.
Yeah, Tom and Chakotay. Yeah.
In other words, useless people anyway. And so.
It's so true.
I say that because of how much you guys in the live chat like makes fun of them. I don't have any experience.
It's so interesting. It does go somewhere in part two, but it is a very interesting combo of people to kidnap.
And then the episode ends with Janeway basically getting to the end of the road with the ship going, knowing that whatever comes next will likely kill anyone on board. So she asks anyone who wants to leave the ship to abandon ship, get in a pod, and good luck getting home. Just get out there in the great vast expanse of space and try to find a buddy, and we'll talk about your stories on the other end. And so it ends with all the pods getting sent off, and that's the end of part one. Did I recap that okay?
Oh, it was amazing. Incredibly detailed. Daniel Cardoso would be extremely proud. Ambassador, I could not read you at all during this episode. I was nervous because you prefaced this with, man, I hope we have some fun this week. And it's a heavy, heavy, heavy episode that is beloved by fans and is like consistently ranked in like the top 10, especially like part one is ranked in the top 10 of all of Voyager's run. So now that I've preloaded you with that knowledge, how did you personally like it? Did you enjoy it? Did you like where it went, what it's doing?
Yeah, I did like it. It's really cerebral. And maybe that's kind of Voyager's shtick.
Nope, not usually.
It's a very... I think it knows it's going to have a lot of episode, but there's a comfortability with like all the important ship. There's a lot of important stuff happening on a ship in space in this episode. Mm-hmm. Every conversation is survival. It's important. It's meaningful. It has the engineering talk. It has all that stuff. And so you really don't get to sit in a moment for very long because they're constantly... constantly under like this siege. So, but I liked it because I really feel like I have a good understanding of the crew. I was a little worried that every time there was another date that came up on screen as it sort of skipped ahead in time to the next like major event, which was another attack, that we were going to be seeing a time reset and maybe even take me out of that crew and then change their timeline, which would have been really
interesting
to kind of get to know them because.
Yeah.
But thankfully they didn't, because this is the same crew on doing what they're doing, trying to survive. They're not resetting like we've seen in some TNG stuff.
That's a really good point, because that would have been very tricky to keep track of, because we get that first wave, which turns the tiny Krenim ship huge. And I guess it would have been tempting to keep resetting that, and maybe Voyager gets repaired and then is damaged. But we sit with this version of Voyager for the entire episode after that wave. So yeah, you're right. The trauma of what they're going through is much easier to appreciate, because it's not like, this will be reset, whatever. I think that's a really smart choice. I hadn't thought about that.
I also liked it because it's something that you can tell a non-Voyager person like myself. I mean, I've seen enough to be familiar, but somebody who doesn't know the characters as in depth, because their personality gets to be consistent through this episode, I got to learn more about Janeway, and I got to learn more about Tuvok and Seven of Nine. Like, my favorite scene in the entire thing is when Seven is guiding Tuvok.
Oh,
like that whole interaction between a Vulcan and an X-Borg was really exciting for me for some reason. I'm like, ooh, look at this efficient communication.
It is one of my favorite things from season four onwards, is how close Tuvok and Seven get, because they are they're on the same spectrum of logic. Like, I guess if we're going with like D&D alignments, Vulcans are like lawful good or lawful neutral.
Lawful and the Borg, for sure. They're lawful.
And the Borg are like lawful evil. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So they're on the same thing, but with like different applications. So the way they bond, and this happens like throughout many, many, many episodes. Like Tuvok is one of the people that Seven relates to the most. So yeah, I feel the same whenever I see them together. Like, of course you guys communicate this way and share the same frustrations.
Yeah. I just feel like that was a good call for how they're putting this episode together. They will, obviously, this is just the first half, so our episode today is just covering what we know up to this point, although I do know one spoiler because Ian accidentally oopsed something, so we'll get to that later. But for the most part, I have no idea what's going to happen the next episode, but there's something really interesting that happens every time I watch you see a ship get fucked up, and... You and maybe others, and I can see that why it would be fun, is it's just like, it's not supposed to happen. You know, like you're really messing up a set. It requires a lot of money and investment to take a set and just jack it up. So
I'm a sucker for it.
Yeah. This episode just slowly fucks up Voyager more and more and more and more.
So, it really is one of the reasons I love these episodes so much. And I always analyze why I love certain episodes more than others. And I love the consistency of TNG, Voyager, and to an extent Deep Space Nine, and definitely TOS, is how much you see the same thing over and over again. Like, it's very comfortable. And that probably is a side effect of budget. Like, it's very expensive to change things all of the time. So having consistent sets that you can play with again and again and again makes sense. So whenever an episode comes along and radically changes things, my eyes are just like saucers and my brain just wants to take in this new thing that I'm seeing. So seeing Voyager gradually deteriorate over time is kind of what I wanted from Voyager, full stop. I kind of wanted over 7 seasons to see Voyager get fucked up with additional parts added on, like bits falling off of it, like a new lick of paint. But Voyager at the end of season 7, spoiler, looks the same as Voyager at the start of season 1, but with a couple of extra green Borgy parts, thanks to 7. So actually watching the ship get ruined and the bridge in pieces, her quarters in pieces, all of the stones and rubble that explode from the bulkheads that we now know are a thing, is so fun. And like, it culminates with Deck 5 blowing up. And that shot is just emblazoned in my brain of the countdown. And it's not just the camera shaking. We get this beautiful external shot of all of Deck 5 blowing up in a row. And I'm like, the geography even makes sense of that, because it's one line of an entire deck blowing up. And you can't do that so well on a model. This is one of the few times where the CGI ship works really, really well for me, because it's so hard to do a controlled explosion on a model that you have to film with next week. But when it's computer generated, you can play with it so much more. So yeah, it's the perfect way to use a CGI ship for me.
And then also, I mean, another thing that I really enjoyed about it, besides getting to know the crew a little bit more, getting to see like a ship get messed up, was specifically getting to see War Janeway. I think that's something that I forgot. It's really different. It hits different when you get to see a strong woman in power. And I liked her intensity. I didn't know where to place it when I was younger. I was like, I don't know what to do with that. I can't be like that. I get in trouble. But
I love it so much.
I did anyway, and I got in trouble. But so just like seeing how she was as a captain, I think really stands out to me for this one, as another reason I really enjoyed it. And there's a mystery to solve, et cetera, et cetera. But yeah, I think overall, I really enjoyed this episode. I thought it did a lot of things really, really well. It has a lot of different conversations happening on a lot of different levels for how a ship would survive, both with food and with injury and with getting hit and trying to figure out how it's going to limp along to the next sort of problem that's going to come. Like, it really does. It's very smart. It's very cerebral in how it approaches. Like, this is how it would happen out in space. So yeah, I liked it.
Yeah, I love that so much. It's something we so rarely get to see in an episode. Like, everything kind of takes place over a day or two. And this is deliberately from day one, you know, something's different because it tells you it's day one. So you're like, oh. So it lets you kind of, I think in another episode, it would move so fast because we're like, man, that's a lot of stuff that happened in a day. And there's a lot of conversations, but it's deliberately jumping through time and then giving us snippets of how the crew are dealing with these different things. And you get the Doctor with his traumatic moment of having to leave those two behind. Tom having to dance around and perform multiple roles. B'Elanna and Kim stuck in the turbo lift. Chakotay coming up with a different plan with Janeway, and Janeway getting more and more cold and harsh. And that works for me because it is that spread out over 3 months that we're seeing them gradually devolve and get more exhausted with this. And it's kind of what I expected Voyager was going to be like in the Delta Quadrant, because you're in hostile territory. So moving into Anorax and the Krennim. So I loved Anorax, your...
That's right, yes. I think we learned his name quite towards the very end of the episode, and I didn't catch it.
Yeah, I don't think it's until he actually addresses Janeway and they come to find the bug that's in the ointment. I love the start of the episode. You were like, oh, that ship is so pretty. Oh, oh no.
The first thing I said was, it was the CGI city. I was like, oh, look at that beautiful city. Ooh, that's a big weapon. Oh no.
Oh no.
This series of, yeah.
Did you get what was, because I'm always interested in this because I can't separate how I feel about the episode now and how it first hit me. So as a new watcher, like, did you understand what was going on, what he was trying to achieve? Or was that a little bit lost and it came later on? Like, how quickly did you get Anorax's plan?
Pretty quickly. I think that they did a good job of using words like eradication.
Yes.
You know, it was pretty evident, just even visually, which was a really nice CGI shot of a city reverting back to nature. And I was like, oh, that'd be nice, right? Like you go in and to this
places
area
we
where there's
do
just,
that too.
Yeah, like there's rubble, there's a worn down city that no one lives in. You're just going to click a button and then, you know, go back to nature. That'd be nice. And then you're like, oh, this is an obsession. You know, I think they did a really good job of, because they're doing this interesting thing where it's not just, what's his name again?
Anorax.
It's not just Anorax.
Rain Jacket.
Also the other guys that are just out there patrolling the K system. I'm not going to remember the phone names.
Oh, whatever. Krenim. Yeah. Krenim? The Krenim star system. The Krenim Imperium, I believe it's called.
The Karens. So you've got the Karens out there and they're like, you know, being all bitchy about who's coming into their neighborhood because it's the so HOA neighborhood or whatever. And then you've got those guys, but you don't quite know that they're entirely separate until towards the end of episode 2 when there's a stronger conversation about them having an eternity. And that's when I really understood that Anthrax, what's his name?
Anorax. Call him Anthrax. It's completely fine. He is a temporal Anthrax.
Why? I just need to have like sticky notes of people's names.
But his first name is An and last name is Thrax.
So Thraxy's like, we have eternity, and his buddy's like, shit, I'm gonna be stuck with this guy forever. So
it's, I think, so interesting to think about, isn't it?
Yeah, they're doing a good job of setting up that there might be even something with them in episode 2 where there's like an internal decision, because they got to 98% perfection and that wasn't enough for Raxi. So we need to see all that play out. But I think they did a good job of starting off by letting us know that the Karens are quote unquote bad, but you don't really quite understand how Raxi is a part of that until maybe like towards the end of the episode. So upon reflection, it's really interesting because there's a chance that the Karens don't know that someone's changing their hairstyle every single time a planet's wiped out.
It's so true. And if anybody is triggered or irritated by Danae getting all of these names mixed up, you're in the wrong podcast. You should love it by now. And I will endorse it forever and ever. It's that parallel between the Karens who know what's going on.
You can say it right. I
love it.
I'll get it right.
Anthrax and Oberon. I think I can't remember his name now. Aberystwyth. His number one. They're on a very, very separate mission that feels like nobody should give them permission to be doing this mission. And yeah, it's so interesting to see how the rest of the Krenims have no idea how radically their history is changing.
Yeah.
And that moment where the wave comes across and suddenly we go from Voyager being very, very cocky against this tiny little ship and then the table suddenly turning is great. And it's a great setup for when they get the temporal shields and the wave comes and Voyager doesn't change. And that, how that is just a big fly in the ointment for Anorak that he couldn't. That was a genuine slip up. That was amazing. For Anorak, and just that's the angriest we see him get. He's very like kind of neutral and he acts outside of time because he is outside of time. So he's like, I'm making these changes, and he's very nonchalant about making the changes because he's like, well, if it doesn't work, I'll just make another one. Like none of this matters until we get to the timeline that I want us to get to. So when Voyager gets in the way, that's like the most angry we see him. And he's like, his calculations are so meticulous and he didn't calculate for a temporally adjusted Voyager. Yeah, I think he's a really fun bad guy.
I do
a fun
too.
Plan.
And I think that there's an important factor that the show reveals, and this is why I call it cerebral, because it's in these layers that it's comfortable not really explaining too much. And I'm sure there's going to be more explanation in the next one. But when the ships initially, the first wave that kind of comes, and things get pretty jacked up after that, and the Karen's ship changes, that was confusing to me, that little like clue, because
changed in size.
Yeah, because I think it went from the lesser ship to the war ship.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it And it was very clear that, oh, in this timeline, a warship is talking to Captain Janeway and crew. And that wasn't as clear until the end of the episode when we see the change back. But I like those kinds of things. I don't want everything spelled out for me. But it wasn't confusing about the mission of the science vessel with the weapon, this temporal weapon. That wasn't super confusing for me because each time we kind of cut over to it, their conversation back and forth is all about, it's very scientific. It's how are the calculations? Are we on this? Are we? And it's very lacking a lot of emotion until there's that, you know, subordinate tries to talk to the boss about, hey, are we sure we're not okay with 98%? You know,
please. It's pretty close.
Theirs was pretty clear to me. And I thought that at the end of the episode is when it really clarified, I think, what we're going to be facing. So yeah, they're very, very strong. They're very confident. They're outside of time space, which wasn't clear until, you know, it was hinted at, but wasn't clear until the end. We have two people that we're going to have to go figure out how to get back, which is very interesting. Like, how are they going to do that on a jacked up ship? But it eliminated the threat of the Karens. So that was also very interesting. So
the timeline
we're in right now, Voyager, although limping along, could survive longer, except for that the new bad is this temporal ship.
Yeah, and they have an advantage. They can technically outrun it, but they cannot stay at warp 7 long enough to just zip through Krenim space. You can call it contrived, but I really love the balance of that. Like, yeah, we can outrun them, but there's a cost. And again, you like Lower Decks has done it a load with the Cerritos, but like when we saw the Cerritos get stripped of all of its parts, but seeing Voyager at warp literally flying apart, because in TNG, there's always, or TOS, you're going to fly her apart, Captain. You can't do this anymore. But then this threat is so real and we literally see Voyager flying apart. But it's an interesting tactic because earlier in the episode, it doesn't make sense to strip the ship down because you'll just get picked off one at a time. But yeah, you're right. In this reality, the Krenim, they're pre-warp. They don't even have warp-capable ships. So splitting apart and doing whatever they're going to do makes a lot of sense. And I can sometimes get frustrated with how part ones end because they kind of need this big cliffhanger moment or something. But this, I think, benefits from being mid-season. So like it isn't the end of season 4 and then we have to wait for season 5. This is next week we get the resolution to this. We get the part 2. So I'm okay with not having like this big dramatic ending and more of a somber, everyone's going their separate ways. They're departing and leaving Voyager.
Something that I think that happened in episodes like this too with time travel. And again, I don't know what's going to be happening in the next one. So live audience, no spoilers, please. But oftentimes you'll get this hint if they're going to undo stuff. So for example, knowing that Voyager is going to be all super well put together, I think that's the only clue that I have that we're going to be undoing some bullshit from the first episode. Like we're going to reset somehow, but usually there's more like, it's more telegraphed with people. Like for example, if someone dies, a main character, you automatically go, well, we're going to reset the timeline so it doesn't matter too much, but they haven't done that. So in my head, I'm heading into episode 2 going, I wonder if there's a chance that this is just part of what happens but most likely they're going to figure out how to do this highly specific calculation that gets everything back to some specifically happy moment and then pushes a button and then we're just going to reset. It's going to be like the 1 year never happened. She'll probably cut back to the, this is going to be a week from hell and then doesn't know that it was just a week instead of a year. There's going to be something like that, but I like that they haven't made anybody die because I don't know at the end of this episode. And so it lets me go back into the next one going, I wonder what they're going to do instead of like, well, now I know for sure this is going to happen. I just have some strong, I have some strong ideas, but I like that I like the way that they wrote it. I thought that it was a fine ending to the first part of a two-parter is what I'm saying. Sometimes they end and I agree. It's like, well, whatever. But this one, it's like, okay, what are you going to do? Now you've sent your crew off. and B'Elanna's all busted. Is she pregnant, by the way?
I don't think she's pregnant yet. No, no.
She sure is acting like a pregnant woman, doesn't she?
No, she definitely like broke her leg in the in the turbo lift or something. I don't think she's pregnant yet.
She's back.
Yeah, she's definitely not pregnant yet. That's not until season 7. I will say, for the audience at home who can't see, I am giving a top-level poker face as Danae is talking about her theories. I actually reached for my drink and was like so desperate to hide my face that I just spilt it all over myself and my headphones fell out. So I didn't hear most of what the ambassador said, which was perfect because that means I can't accidentally spoil what happens with the episode. But I completely agree. The way they've managed what's happened in episode 1, we've seen Voyager come back from a lot. Like at this point, they've gone through Borg space and they've had huge battles with the Borg. And we're kind of at this point, we're like, I guess you can just repair whatever the fuck you want. Fine. Okay. So all of the cosmetic and functional damage to Voyager, we're like, okay, and you're right, not killing off any main characters is really smart because you're like, oh, come on, people. Like, now I know you're just going to reset. Fine. So, yeah, I completely agree. The way they manage expectations in this episode is so deliberate and really, really smart. Like, someone in the live chat has mentioned Tuvok going blind is probably the biggest thing that might trigger you to think, ah, is that permanent? But we've seen blind characters in the show. He has the awesome tactile interface that's like, cool, this just happens.
I assume at this point that any injury, whether it's a broken back or fucked up eyes, will be fixed once they have their medical bay back. Like right now it's just...
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, that makes sense.
You're in a triage situation. You're going to be limping around for a few weeks and then we're going to fix you later, that kind of a thing. That's what I assume is going to be happening. So nothing is quite so far down the line that I know exactly what they're going to do. So yeah, I think this is a great episode. I also really do think that this would be a good episode to show someone who hasn't seen Voyager.
Because oh my God, no, that's horrible.
What? Why?
That's so traumatic. It's like, look at all of the, it's miserable. I guess, wouldn't you like assume that the entire, like, I don't completely disagree, but wouldn't you assume the entire show is really dark and miserable?
Not if the person watching it with you says, I think I want to start you here and then we'll do other ones.
Yeah, I guess so. I was like, this is basically as bad as it gets in terms of like darkness and tone.
I mean, darkness and tone aside, this is doing everything you want a show to do that tells you about what to expect from a show because of how everyone's interacting. Like you genuinely get to see a really unique view of each person. Neelix has a couple of moments where you realize that he's still annoying. Then you've got Seven of Nine, like when she's in that Jeffrey's tube and she discovers like this temporal photon torpedo that just didn't
blow up. Yeah, the temporal torpedo.
And she's talking to Tuvok and he's like, you need to get out of there. And she's like, you need to hurry, you know, but she's not doing it in a dramatic way. It's very deadpan. And you're like, what is this character? You know, there's all these, you get to see different kinds of the ship and yes, it's exploding. But if you're showing this to someone who's never watched Star Trek before, yeah, maybe it's a little intense, but if they've seen Star Trek before and they haven't seen any of Voyager, it's a unique way to show how this particular crew handle something really serious. So I don't know. This might be my favorite one to recommend so far as a first watch. Janeway is really interesting too. Like when she walks into her ready room and just starts like chucking rubble around, like, God damn, yeah, this happened again. And she's like clearing things off of her desk. And I did not know that I wanted to relate to someone like that. She's on day whatever of being under siege. And this is probably the third or fourth time she's had to clear off her desk and just sit down and she finds her bottle of what I assume is alcohol or whatever she's about to do. I don't know. Chakotay has a little bit of facial hair growing to show the passage of time.
They've drawn on a mustache. Yeah.
Yep. And she's just got this way of being super annoyed at everything that's happening around her, but yet also it's just what an interesting character. She's an interesting character. I'm interested more in her than I think I ever have been based on this. I don't know how do you think she was as a captain in this moment? Because I'm kind of not really, I don't have a lot to compare it to as far as war tactics.
Well, you've first of all, you've swung me around, and I think you're absolutely right. I actually think this is a great episode to show you. Huh? Like, that's the quickest 180 I've ever mentally done, because this really, this episode does show the highs and lows of what the Voyager crew go through. So to speak to like what kind of a leader Janeway is, the opening is she's very positive and nonchalant and very like, we are alone in the Delta Quadrant. And when she's meeting the Zal leader and talking about the Krenim, and she's like, yeah, we're on an adventure. We're like trying to get home and bonding with a new alien and like dismissing the Krenim out of hand because... well, you better have something more in your torpedo tubes because we're going to keep on going.
She's so sassy. I mean, so sassy. She seems a bit reckless.
Yeah, a little bit reckless, very determined to get home. And then the shift into when she's faced with a bully. And I don't react to threats very well. And then like really serious face of, I will keep this crew together. We will get home. Just like, stop giving me birthday presents. What the hell are you doing? Happy birthday. Fuck you. Yeah. I'm busy like spannering this thing with this light stick that I have. And yeah, she goes straight into business mode, but then it shifts into Seven of Nine and the mystery of like figuring out why the Krenim have suddenly disappeared. And she's energized by this scientific mystery that she's trying to figure out. Instead of, fuck that, let's go now that the Krenim aren't here. She's like, I want to know why, because I don't like the fact that we're suddenly okay. I need to know why this is happening. So for Janeway, this is extremely representative of how Janeway manages the ship and how she faces different situations as well.
I just thought too, as well, there's a weird thing that happens at the beginning with that first time wave, like that hits everybody, because there was the other species that was being eradicated. So what's the non-Karens?
Yeah, the Zals.
The Zals.
Yeah.
So there was one on the ship, and when that Zal disappears, no one reacts. And I was wondering why, and then it reveals itself later. Like, they didn't know that the Zal was actually there in this new timeline. Like,
yeah, the Zal have never existed. Like, their home planet has been eradicated from all of time, always. This is Loki. Like, this is literally, like, Loki the TV show way before, 30 years before Loki was a thing. He is the militant TVA eradicating timelines, but in a very selective way. Just let's erase this planet from history. They were the ones that defeated the Krenim in the war and made them lose their space. What happens if they never existed? So yeah, they vanish from Voyager because they were never on Voyager. They never were a species.
Yeah, you can't really think too much about the setup of this episode because every reset changes what anyone would know, except for who's on the ships, the two main protected ships. So it's an interesting episode. If any reason not to show this one to someone for the first time, it is that it's a bit cerebral in that way. Sorry, I keep using that word. I can't really think of a different word that would describe it better.
Just wait until you get to episode two. This is what I keep thinking, is that it is that as a two-parter, it is extremely cerebral, and the cerebral stuff is yet to come. Like, there's even more of it in part two. Like, for me, they really, we'll get more into it next week, but they really, they front load the setup and the action here and then dive into the philosophy next week. And I love that so much.
The other thing I really liked is the degradation of the crew, not just the ship, which is fun to watch. It's fun to see a set be all messed up and everything, but towards the end, even with Tom Paris, they're like, you know what to do. He's like, evasive maneuvers, you know, and he's just tired. And then you have blind Tuvok who's stumbled in and she's just kind of looking at him and you're just thinking, man, what would she be thinking? Just everyone is limping along, but no one is giving up, which is a strange phenomenon that you feel when we try to almost instinctively parrot what we're looking at. So you're feeling the weight of this episode. But I was really connecting to the determination, which gave me another jolt of excitement for the last act of this episode. I was like, yeah, look at them. They're surviving. So when we get to the defeat moment, I'm like, oh, shit, they're actually abandoning ship. So we'll see what happens in episode two. But that
Voyager
also worked for me.
Sustain her crew. It's such a sad, like, it's such a huge thing. Like, they've threatened it multiple times over the three seasons at this point of like settling down on a planet, leaving the ship, like, and every time Janeway's like, I'm not doing it, because as soon as we leave Voyager, that is 0% chance of getting home. It's not happening unless Q comes along and snaps us back home, which he said he won't do for whatever reason.
Okay, but quick question. Had she evacuated ship, had she abandoned ship then and they hadn't figured out how to do their temporal shield, would, and they reset the timeline, the main bad guy, Alex. I don't know
why
his name just involves Alex.
But you've got this.
So would they have all just reset back to some time when they were outside of the Karen sphere?
So they would have, so the Krenim Imperium would still be the dominant force in the sector. And I think they would have, this would have reset to, I mean, it could have gone one of a few ways, but Voyager is still in trouble. It either resets to a point where the ship has been blown up, or they're still fighting, or they've abandoned ship and they're settling on some random planet. So I think either way, they're like at that point, he's making another adjustment to get from 98% to 98.5%. So it's still a universe where the Krenim are in command. They're the dominant force.
Yeah, I guess it's not clear if he's trying to go to a specific point in time or if he's trying to recreate something. And that's not entirely clear to me at this point. If it's a point in time, then they're trying to go back to somewhere somehow. Which
more
I know is, you can't confirm.
Yeah, more is elaborated on next week, yeah.
Yeah, if it is a back in time situation, then it would also potentially revert them back to a specific time. But if it's just altering something to recreate from here forward, then yeah, who knows where the Voyager.
Either way, it's bad news for Voyager unless he's adjusting something that prevents, as a downstream effect, Voyager from ever getting into the Delta Quadrant.
Exactly.
And that is something they dive into
which
next
we'll
week.
We'll never know because they're not going to do that.
Oh my gosh. It's just, it's this, somebody in the, I think Flyboy mentioned in the chat, it's the butterfly effect on steroids done really well. And it is. It's such like, it's a Moby Dick story combined with, because Anorax is chasing this goal, combined with the butterfly effect and how every moment in time affects every other moment in time. And it's just combining those two stories. And it's why Star Trek is so fucking cool, because you just plump that together, put your characters that we love in that situation, and you get to explore, like, what would this mean for the crew? I love it. You mentioned like what doesn't work for me. There is only one thing that works for that doesn't work for me, and we're gonna expand upon it more next week because it links into this idea that the writers wanted this initially to be an entire season. So all of season four was going to be the Year of Hell, and Rick Berman shot that down because Voyager needed to be episodic so that it worked in syndication. He was worried that a serialized story was going to be too complicated for viewers, even though all of TV is basically now serialized. He was like, you won't be able to keep track with all of the threads over an entire season. So it got shunted into two parts. But I think there's a middle ground for me where this is a three-part episode or a four-part episode, because I want a little bit more space to breathe in the trauma and the drama. And I think all of the moments mean more. Like I love the scene where Seven of Nine has this opportunity to scan the bomb and to get the temporal signature that they need to protect against the weapons. I think that moment has a lot more weight when you have more time with them in this absolute war zone, because that's about half an hour into the episode. So we haven't had a lot of time where they're really facing with life on Voyager is shit right now, and it's hopeless. And this beacon of hope, literally, Seven of Nine is risking everything to get it. And that the consequence is incredible, because Tuvok is the one that pays the price by protecting her and going blind from the explosion. But I think all of those moments mean more when we've lived in it a bit longer. So I'm not on board with it being a full season, but I think this first part needs more than 45 minutes to breathe.
I liked it.
Yeah.
I liked it.
I still love it, but I think it could be better. Who knows,
you know, maybe because you've watched the second one and you know how much lifting is going to be done next, you've got like a stronger view of that. But for what I just watched, I really enjoyed it. Of course, I would love to spend more time with these characters and scenes, though, specifically Tuvok and Seven. But I thought it was really interesting because it was just like snippet, 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 which was very clever.
Having like that could just be me being greedy because this still completely works for me. And this is one of my fan favorites as well. I go back to it very regularly because it does work overall for me. There's just a part of my brain that's like, there's a middle ground where I think we get more out of this story and we get a couple of extra episodes out of it. And there's so many stories to tell during this period of time. It's so fun because I think in season three, partway through season three, Kes, there's a story with Kes where she's moving through time and she's in the year of hell. And at the end of that episode, some things happen and she says to Janeway, she tries to warn her about Krenim space and that the year of hell is going to happen. And that's an entire year before it happens. So those seeds for what they were going to do were already planted in season three and then get delivered upon in season four. So I can't imagine, like, I want that world where it's foreshadowed in season three and then season four happens. So yeah, there's just this alternate universe, ironically, where I want to see how much more story there is to tell during this episode.
Anything else you didn't like about the episode?
No, honestly, I can't honestly say that there's anything that didn't work for me. I love this. I love the vignettes that we get throughout the episode. This is, spoiler alert, I think the most fucked up we ever see Voyager. And I love that. I love seeing them down on their luck. And like, this is what the Delta Quadrant should be. And the stakes are so high because they're so far from home.
I did too. But I like how it wasn't just visually that they were adjusting the ship. Even in how they were talking about what was shutting down and what was happening because of it. So another element of this episode, I think that a Star Trek fan would really, really enjoy is listening to how they are working through the puzzle pieces of this is what happens when a ship starts to shut down. Like when you say that we're losing 9 decks, I'm like, okay, whatever. When they say half the ship, you're like, oh, fuck, you know, or when you say, now our replicators aren't working, so we're going to rations. Now this is off, so we can't move between levels using the lift anymore because this has happened. So each of the ways that they're used to having this luxury of getting around on a starship or this luxury of being able to create whatever you want is all slowly being impacted. And I think that's really fascinating to kind of watch. And then we're lucky that, of course, the one element of the ship that needs to be online to solve a great mystery happens to be working, but that's just how the story is, guys.
Also, the part of the ship that they only just invented at the start of this episode, the stellar cartography. I think this is the first episode it appears in, and it's this advanced stargazing room that gets used a lot throughout the series from this point onwards. It kind of becomes Seven's little hidey hole where she gets to play with stuff and do her experiments and whatnot. It's beautiful. I love that deck that is set up in front of the huge screen where they get to where they have like the new course that they're going to map out. Yes, I think it's clever to use that in this episode instead of just like a graphic on screen. Because if you think back to TNG, it would be at the back of the bridge on one of those little science consoles, and then you see a graphic where something has changed. This has just got this huge, like, multiple story IMAX screen that's showing the Delta Quadrant as they know it. It's a really cool plot device.
Should we shift into the sins on that thought?
Yeah, absolutely. Before we go into the sins, give me your overall pips for the episode.
Oh, I would say 4 pips.
Yeah, I think it's a 4 pipper for me as well.
It's a serious 4 pip, but it's a 4 pip. Yeah, I think they did everything that you want your Star Trek to do in this episode, except for maybe make me laugh.
Oh, I don't know. Like when Seven is in the shaft and in the Jeffrey's tube, and he's like, "There's an unexploded torpedo here," and Tuvok's like, "I'm on my way," and she's like, "Arrive quickly." You get a couple of humor beats. I love that. And Neelix being a dork. But yeah, it's four pips from me. I love this episode so, so much. It's so unique. With that, let's head over to engineering to do some sins. What's left of it? Battle stations, red alert.
Warning. Warp core collapse in 10 seconds.
This is the part of the show where we re-engage our sin brains, remind ourselves that no TV shows without sin, even our beloved Star Trek. Ambassador, what didn't work for you? What sins have you got?
Okay, so my question is, was this a storage room before the big astrological IMAX viewing area? We're on a ship in the middle of nowhere. What was it? Was it the ladies' bathroom? What was it before? Did they ever explain that? How did they find this extra space for this room?
There is a I haven't got any sources, so somebody back me up. But this room was, in theory, going to be Cetacean Ops, and they were going to expand upon the idea that Cetacean Ops is a thing. So it was going to appear in Voyager, and it never actually popped up. So they ignored the fact that there were dolphins on the ship and did stellar cartography, astrometric. And I think I keep getting the names confused, but I think this is called astrometrics, and it replaced the stellar cartography lab. So the stellar cartography lab is the room that they would use to like map out stuff. And it kind of doubled with Cetacean Ops a bit before they were brave enough to put dolphins on the ship with Lower Decks. But it's that room. It's basically the same lab, but they just replaced it with better sensors, and now we actually get to see it. But you're right. Like, considering the resources they have, it is wild that they managed to pull this together.
Yeah.
Make this entire room.
I was like 20 people's sleeping area. Get out. We want to make a big screen here and a really big stage and like a really big room for just a couple of panels.
And there are literally people that are double bunking, even outside of an emergency. There are people on Voyager that share rooms, and they're just like, cool, I'm glad 7 of 9 gets an entire fucking cargo bay, which is where her regeneration pods are, and alcoves, and she gets stellar cartography as well. Like, I think her square footage on the ship is ridiculous. It's such a great sin. I have got, this is so silly, but at the beginning of the episode, Janeway says, space, the great unknown. And it triggers me so hard because I'm like, that's not how it goes, Janeway. It's the final frontier. Don't you edge me with a space and then shift it to the great unknown. Don't you do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm going to send black gloves again because the Karen, the Alpha Karen, AKA Alex Trebek, he has gloves on, and the entire crew does as well. And we just recently watched when this crew was like a bad crew and they all had black gloves on. So I was like, oh my God, the black gloves.
Gotta recycle them.
Yeah.
Evil people have got to have evil black gloves is a very legit sin. As soon as 7 of 9 joins the ship, and this is her 8th episode. So it's only this season that she's joined. And Janeway is very nonchalant about the way that they're profiting off of Borg assimilation. So she's like, with the help from Harry Kim and some Borg ingenuity, it's kind of like saying, thanks to the Nazis, we get this new stellar cartography. Like, she's very nonchalant with the way she's like, thanks to all of this Borg technology. Like, we don't know how the Borg got this. They assimilated thousands and thousands of people, but cool, you're going to use it to map some stars. And there's very little acknowledgement about the problematicness of using all of Seven's knowledge. I'm not saying they shouldn't use it, but a cursory, let us remember all that was lost to give us this technology.
Yeah, it wasn't kind of like, let's take a moment of silence for all of the millions of people who were assimilated for this information. It was kind of like, yay, Borg!
Instead, let's just give a sideways chuckle when 7 of 9 starts talking about resistance quotients.
That does remind me of I don't know if this is a sin or just like a question, but her knowledge comes in an interesting space for knowing the trivia to the Phoenix being mentioned. Then she says the Borg were there, ... It's complicated. So do you know what that's referencing?
I sure freaking do.
Is that a sin off? Like, is that a fun reference? I'm used to seeing references just I'm blasted with them on Lower Decks, but this was one I don't usually see them in Star Trek because TNG wasn't really referencing TOS, but here Voyager is referencing something and it stuck out to me and I forgot to mention it.
100%. And I love it. I was giddy when I was a kid watching this episode, knowing what it's referencing, because it's so rare to hear Star Trek reference another iteration. So this episode came out the same year or the year after. May even be a few months after the second Star Trek movie, First Contact. And the premise of that movie is that there's a big Borg attack. The Enterprise gets thrown back in time because the Borg want to prevent First Contact from happening and blow up the Phoenix. So it is a bit of brand synergy because they're both coming out at the same time. So Seven of Nine.
Definitely a sin then. Okay, got it.
It's 100% a sin because you're referencing something pretty huge. But I love it so much because it's we know the Borg were there and she would know that the Borg were there. So it's one of those sins that I would write either way, because I'd be like, well, Seven of Nine would know the answer to that because the Borg were technically there. But then she goes and actually says it because she knows more than this crew does about what actually happened during First Contact.
So the sin here is promoting your own stuff, but also yeah. The sin, I think the chat wants me to sin you a bit because it's the 8th Star Trek movie, not the 2nd Star Trek movie. It's the 2nd TNG movie. So, happy Star Trek fans listening to the podcast. Don't worry. They've already got him on that one.
I apologize in my excitement for misnumbering my favorite Star Trek film.
How could you?
Second favorite is my second favorite. Third so favorite? That'll,
I guess, be my sin for this one. But
brand synergy. That is absolutely the sin. Mm-hmm. This is a sin that's an overall sin for Voyager, but one that is exemplified really well in this episode is at the beginning when the Zal ambassador or captain is talking in the observation lounge. He's like, how exciting. You're so far away from home, all on your own, on an adventure. Stop giving that away. I think Janeway needs to stop volunteering how vulnerable they are. And it happens so much where the first thing she says that we're a long way from home, we're journeying 85,000 light years away. It's we bad, want to yeah. Stop. Stop telling people. Stop. Oh, so you mean that you have zero backup? Great, we'll take your ship. Like, it's wild how often, like, you when you realize how bad an idea that is, it's wild how often Janeway volunteers that information.
Yeah, you know, that's probably one of the prerequisites for the writers, that they have to say it in every episode in case that's their first time to watch Voyager.
We're a long way from home. And that is absolutely the function of it.
Yeah, we're a long way from home. Okay.
Anything else, Ambassador?
Yeah, absolutely. Did you see what happened when the Jeffries tube wouldn't open and Seven of Nine couldn't get the panels to work? So she just like booped a panel and took out a little sucker thing and it just opened.
Yeah,
I understand why. It's interesting to see that there's a backup way to get through the tubes in case the systems fail. But the fact that nobody, like anyone who wants to just hijack a ship someday, that's like hiding your spare key for your vehicle attached to your rearview mirror.
Yeah, it's the manual release suction pads. It's absolutely true. I think I would counter with there's a difference between stuck and locked. So I don't think it's that the Jeffries tube. Doesn't matter.
If you walk up to a car, you're like, is that the key? You're going to use it.
I don't think it was locked. I think it's just the power is down. So there has to be a way to open the door when the power is down. It's like a fire escape. There's a manual way to open it if you lose power.
So you're saying that is essentially like, instead of it being a key, it's more like a rock to break the window.
Yes, correct. Okay. Yeah. And that would be very impractical because the rocks need to be in the bulkhead. The rocks all need to stay in there because they're crucial to distributing the neutron flow.
Okay, so my sin, which would have been something clever like, don't look in this panel here.
Yeah.
The line that's just up there.
The break in case of emergency.
Yeah. Okay, all right. All right, fine. You've nulled that sin.
That's not where I thought you were going because you were like the Jeffries tube with the explosion. I'm like, yeah, exactly. How do they survive a torpedo exploding in their faces?
So when we come back from the commercial break after that and Tuvok is, you know, shaving his face. We don't know blind, but he's shaving his face. And then we revealed that that's when I literally wrote down. So we're just going to skip over how they survived that. But I guess it just sprayed light.
I guess it was just a very teeny tiny explosion that they survived.
Or are we meant to believe that they were able to erect the force field? He pulled her out of the force field area. The force field went up. It exploded inside of that containment force field. And the brightness is what burned his retina.
What you just said sounds fucking incredible. And I would have loved to see that on. That would have been to see the explosion happen. And then suddenly the force field comes up. Because that makes total sense. Because the blinding light blinds him. But the force of the explosion is stopped by the force field. Great. Even tell me that's what happened. But forever, I'm like, I can't reconcile how you survived that, because you mentioned the force field, but we don't see it. We just see the explosion and are left to assume the worst. This is where, like, I'm not relieved he's alive. I'm confused and befuddled.
Chad is saying that the writers may have wanted Tuvok to also lose his leg in that one, which would indicate that they did not intend to have a force field up either for that. So it yeah.
I mean, or anyways, the force field cuts his leg off.
Just general confusion, burn it off most likely.
Yeah.
In general, those are the moments when you have to kind of fill in the blanks. But when you come back from a commercial break after an explosion and he's fine, my first thought was, okay, so is this like meanwhile on a separate timeline moment?
Right. And you've got to do that because this is before the times, children, of being able to rewind things or be able to like watch them on demand or rewatch them. You wouldn't have been able to rewatch this for a very long time until it was like, well, I guess maybe it would be repeated somewhere, but it would be a very deliberate act to try and rewatch this. So that's why I think you need a little bit more exposition to say how he survived a torpedo blowing up, or I just don't care about torpedoes anymore. That's the alternative.
I also just have a question that could be a sin about something that was confusing to me, which I guess in general, if you confuse me, I'm just going to sin you for it.
It's fair. It's absolutely fair. You haven't done your job well enough.
So there's a moment, I don't remember what day it was, but it was in the middle-ish mm-hmm. to end of the days.
Yeah.
When they had finally figured out how to temporally phase their deflector dish.
Yep.
Okay. They survive the hit. She sends out the warning like, hey, fuck you guys, we figured it out.
Mm-hmm.
And then she says, okay, let's go in to the territory.
Yeah, let's plow through.
Does that mean that everything that preceded that was just happening at the border?
No, I think they were still making their way through, but okay. Trying to like duck and weave. Trying to duck and weave through ships and eventually being unable to avoid, because that's the only advantage Voyager has, is that it is one ship in a lot of space. So I think they're hiding and like getting through, and now the road is open for them to just go.
Got
just
it.
Plow through. Yeah.
Okay.
As fast as they can, because they can risk some more interactions because they're not as deadly.
Right. Okay.
I still think it's incredible that, I mean, my next sin is that I know Krenim space is apparently big, but you know what's better than a long, do you know what's worse than a long journey? A dead journey. Like, retreat and go around space, but there's not even like a cursory line of, no, it would add 15 years to our journey if we go around. I feel like that should have been entertained as a, how about we just don't go through Krenim space?
Yeah, well, that was my thing. It's like, if you've just been sitting at the border going, no, we want to come in, and you're just like exchanging battle, and then finally figure it out and like, now we can go in. It's like, just go around. You've got 73 days of, but no, I think I misunderstood. So that's it for me.
Oh man, you just inspired me with, I mean, they do the, oh, my brain just went to a million different places. They use Borg technology to use that to create the astrometrics lab. But why not like develop a cloaking device? And then I'm just like, why don't the Borg have cloaking devices? That would be fucking terrifying. And maybe like the Borg don't, because they don't care. They're so strong. They don't waste their energy on cloaking devices because they just plow through people. But surely they have the technology because they've assimilated Klingons. So why not cloak Voyager? Surely like Seven of Nine should have the... But then I guess you can just go down too many bunny trails of what technology Seven of Nine could actually give them.
Well, you want to have somebody on your crew that can be the android and know all the answers.
Oh, yeah.
But you don't want to have too much or it's no fun. So they can't make the ship the android version of a ship and then just let it do all of the things. Yeah. I do love the visual of them rolling back home with a spare tire on. Like, well, one of their nacelles is ridiculously too small.
Don't laugh at me.
It's like when somebody like really messes up their car, like it just needs to get me another 6 months. And so they have just duct tape over a window and all this various stuff. That would be amazing to see. But
That's what I wanted to see at the end of Voyager, for real. I think that's it for me. I do have some more sins that I'm going to save for next week, but I do want to give a sin removal for Kurtwood Smith, who is Anorax Anfrax, Alex Trebek in this episode. I love the intensity. I knew him from, he was the bad guy in RoboCop, the first one.
Is he the guy in Lost?
No. Although interestingly, he was the villain in The Pegasus, which is the episode that you missed.
Oh,
are you thinking of Locke from Lost?
Yeah, I can't remember where I've seen him that he's so familiar to me, but I'm sure it'll come to me later.
Yeah, he's in a lot. Oh, I think he's in that 70s show or that 90s show.
Dad.
He's the dad in that. Yeah.
That's right. Yeah.
That's what he's probably most famous for now. But yeah, he was, loved him in RoboCop. He's also the Federation president in Star Trek V, I believe. Nope, Star Trek VI. Star Trek VI, don't come at me. I said it right. Star Trek VI, I'm sorry. It's Star Trek VI. But no, I think he's great. And I love it when Star Trek can pull really great actors to be bad guys. I love that. I love that. So it always elevates an episode. Well, no surprise, next week we'll be diving into The Year of Hell Part 2 to wrap this up and get a bit deeper into this story. So join us next week for that one. We'll be live on the Cinema Sins live Twitch channel and on YouTube live on the CSPN channel. You can join us on the 17th of March at 1 p.m. Central. Send us any sins and any questions or anything you want to send us. The best way to do that is either by email, CaptainSpod@cinemasins.com, or on our lovely Discord, discord.gg/cinemasins, where we have a lovely Star Trek community. So yeah, until next week, I'm Captain Ian, and unless you've got something a little bigger in your torpedo tubes, I'm not turning around.
And while repetitive, it's we're a long way from home from me, because that's said all of the time.
Live long and prosper.
Thanks for listening. Want to connect with the show? Our hailing frequencies are always open through CaptainsPod@cinemasins.com. Like, comment, and subscribe on your podcast player of choice, and be sure to visit cinemasins.com.
Test, test, test. Testity, testity, test. How are you this week, Ambassador?
Good. I am. I decided to do something that hadn't been done in a couple of years that elevated my life significantly and also serves as a reminder that I technically am not a biohazard any longer. Like, that's a choice you make to deep clean a bathroom. That's a decision as an adult.
Oh, yeah. Deep.
I also decided to like rearrange my bathroom a little bit. And so I moved my toothbrush down my bathroom counter, technically closer to my toilet. So I thought, okay, I really need to be careful to close the lid when I flush, right? Because I just...
But do you know what happens when you close the lid when you flush? It sprays...
Do you break the toilet lid like I did?
Did you?
Yes.
How did you do that?
I don't know. I'm very strong, apparently.
So strong. No, because when you flush with the lid closed, instead of expelling it into the room, it gets... The same amount gets fired out as a blast into your kneecaps and shins. So then you just like carry around an atmosphere of poop on your knees.
So it's just instead of it being dispersed all over your body, it's just knee centric.
Concentrated, yeah. I mean, that poor cat, if the cat's in the room and just gets blasted at head height.
It is better to close the lid though.
Is it?
Yes.
Is that proved?
I mean... That is something that I've read on multiple like health sites is that it's important to keep the lid down because of what they, I think they call, hold on a second. I think they call it Toilet plume?
Toilet plume. Yeah, but you're replacing it with a toilet jet.
That's not this. No.
I think somebody out there knows and should email us immediately.
I cannot wait until we get the emails on this one. Usually there's a dog right here, but I left the door open to my studio, and so he has wandered off. Probably to get in the trash can again. Reason! I walked out earlier to just grab a drink real quick before we started the show, and his little mustache was completely horizontal on both sides.
Like just because, out?
Huh?
Out?
Yeah, because he had grabbed a bar, like a snack bar, from the counter or somewhere. And he had it in his mouth fully. And so it was just pushing his cheeks out. And I was like, what's wrong with your face? It's like, it was so funny.
Drop it.
I do have a quick one before we start, which is that the weather has begun to be nicer. We had like a little pop of sleety snow for like 24, 48. It got kind of a little bit cold. But as it started to get warm, the cat heard the call of the birds returning for their usual mating season in the neighborhood. And his kill count in 10 days was 3 dead birds and 1 bird that he got into my garage. And then he didn't do the coup de grace or whatever it's called. And the bird got out of his grasp and flew up into the mechanisms of the garage door. And so when I wrangled the cat inside, I opened up the garage doors so that the bird would hopefully have a chance to fly out. Now, the last time this happened, the bird actually ended up succumbing to its injuries. That's not part of the current kill count because that was from before. So legit a hunter.
Clearly, the cat has lost his wife and is trying to reset the birdie timeline and won't stop until he has been reunited.
It's not his wife? Oh, that's his motivation.
Fuck. Shit.
Oh, that's why he's doing it. Oh, so that's a lock of her hair. I thought it was a woolly worm.
I didn't know what that was.
I was like, is that a floating parasite?
Oh, no.
Chat was talking about the actress potentially being pregnant, Roxana Dawson. If I'm right about her being pregnant during this episode, that is so fantastic because she is acting like a pregnant woman. And I'm telling you right now, I'm like, so Paris and her must be a thing because they're obviously being affectionate. And then the doctor at one point sort of really points that particular part out. But the way that that was being acted, I assumed that she was also pregnant. So if it was the actor that was, I'll be quite proud of myself on that.
I'm having a quick look now.
We might have to find out. Was she?
She was pregnant during season 4 of the show. Yes, she's absolutely maneuvering around like a pregnant lady. That's a good catch, Danae. Well done.
You can always tell when our hands are protectively over our abdomen.
Oh, that's incredible.
Just, like, get away from that. Yeah, she was really like just holding her. The way she was standing was almost like on a curved sort of high to belly or like.
Good eye. Belly.
Yeah.
Good eye. That's amazing. That's fun.
Da, da, da.
Danae was here for Amok Time. She absolutely loved it. Spoiler. However, somebody confirmed for me, did we do Pips? I don't remember if we did Pips last week for Amok Time.
I don't remember doing Pips, but I would have given it all of the Pips.
Yeah.
For retroactively pipping.
Yeah. I mean, I'll give it 4 pips as well. Like, it's with the Vulcan law that's set up. Live long and prosper, the Vulcan salute. 4 stars all the way. So there you go. There's our pips for Amok Time.
This is a sin from Sci-Fi Brony. Jamie wants Chakotay to recycle the watch for further resources. Okay, that part kind of makes sense. But then why not recycle all the debris all throughout the ship, including the bridge that you are currently on?
Yeah, because the replicator doesn't care if it's a watch, if it's a bit of rock, if it's a chair. If it's your shoes, everybody, like when you go that extreme, just start shaving people and just recycling their hair.
But what about used Band-Aids?
I don't think it cares because it's breaking it down into its like constituent energy.
Like who cares? Don't ask where your food comes from. Just eat it. This one from Wandering really captured my attention because it starts off by saying Janeway is a terrible captain. She should not be bullying. Quote, we're going to go home and always press forward, unquote. Even when the other ships don't pose a threat to them, at least negotiate. But especially when it's getting them this pounded, like, holy crap, you're not going to get them home if they're all dead. I agree with that, except for that the alternative that they were given was to be captured and taken as prisoners. So I think at that point, she was already engaged in something she couldn't back out of. But I think her attitude kind of got them into the situation in the first place because she was being sassy.
I love that so much. It's so true, especially at the beginning of the episode when they're faced against a weaker ship and she's super just rude and is like, well, unless you're going to shoot me with something bigger, I'm going to trample through your lawn. I'm going to go through your house and I'm just going to bulldoze my way. Like, there's no let's negotiate. Let's talk about it. I'm sorry. Let's respect your space. I'm not going to intrude. She does just plow through because they're weak. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a really, really good point. I did love this message. I'm sorry, my English is a little bit rusty. Did you say there were dolphins on the ship? Like literal dolphins? Yes, that is a thing. It is established in TNG that cetacean ops is a thing. They have dolphins on board that help them navigate through space.
I didn't believe this either at all. But it came up because of a show in the Star Trek world called Lower Decks, which is an animated show. So they get to actually animate the dolphins and they're in a room that has a lot of water. Don't they wear little gear? Don't they have?
They have little Star Trek uniforms. Yeah. And they're super intelligent. And I mean, the idea is that dolphins do communicate. They just communicate in a different way than we do. And in the future, we've managed to cross that language barrier.
RX also said it was one of the reasons I got a little tired of time travel episodes in TNG and DS9, mostly because they had no repercussions or consequences and whatever they showed had no emotional impact on me. You know that they're going to fix it. This is so true. This is why sometimes when we'll watch shows, we're like, well, what are the stakes? If you're not going to kill anybody, let them die. What are the stakes? What are we, you know, learning? We're just learning how to feel emotion, but then go, oh, but someone's going to fix it, instead of how to like permanently adapt to the situation like that they're saying. So for example, I think about the one that we sin a lot, which is like, Olaf is dead. Okay, Olaf is no longer dead. He's back. You know,
why am I worried about him melting? Yeah, it's that one episode memory that is the biggest advantage. It's the biggest strength and the biggest weakness of TNG and TOS. Is you can go into any episode and rewatch it, but because it's so easy to watch, you know, there's very, very little stakes involved. So yeah, it's a different kind of TV experience.
The last one I had saved was Janeway was the only one of the series lead captains who was a science officer before being promoted.
I love that. It's really, really cool. Her field was science and she was a science officer on a different ship and then became captain. So it's really fun.
That really makes that one scene where she's trying to scientifically understand and calculate how this space has changed and their part in it even more interesting. Because you're right, like she lit up when she had a mystery to solve.
Yes.
Rather than becoming this like, you know, war captain. Yeah. So that was really cool. That's very nice. How well acted I felt like all of that was.
Yeah, you know, I've absolutely had it up to here with you being so amazing, Ambassador.
I wasn't even thinking for one split second that you were being close? Serious.
I'm hoping there's at least one listener out there that sits upright and is like, whoa, shit.
Lowe's knows that no matter your paint project, saving is at the top of your list. That's why when you shop today, you can buy one, get one free select Valspar and HGTV Home by Sherwin-Williams one coat coverage interior paints via rebate. Shop these deals in-store or online today at Lowe's. We help, you save. Selection varies by location while supplies last. Discount taken at time of purchase. See sales associate for details. Offer valid 8/21 through 9/3.